This is iFanboy Booksplode Planetary Book 2.
He loves your sexy body. He loves your dirty mind. He loves when you hold him, grab him from behind.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Booksplode Planetary Book 2. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And we're back with our Booksplode series. This is the Patron Unlocked show that alternates with the Talksplode series, in which we review a graphic novel, trade paperback, collected edition of some sort. The last 2 years, most of the time, we've been doing nostalgia tours. And we decided to finish the Planetary story because we did book one, I think it was last year.
It was long enough that when I was reading this one, I was like, wait.
Yeah, there was
like we just did it, but
there was a point where I was like, should I reread the first one? And I was like, I can't. I don't have time for that. But I did actually. Yep. I did. You know, I did. I read the last issue of the first book over because I did. I started reading the first issue of this one, and I was like, I have no idea what's going on, and so I had to go back. Much like the way it was to read the series when it was coming out, because Planetary, as you may or may not know, was a series from Wildstorm DC Comics, written by Warren Ellis, drawn by John Cassay. She was Laura Martin for a while. She was Laura Martin. This is her name changed in the middle of it. Dave Barron also did some colors in this collected edition, and we'll talk about that later. But it's been primarily Warren Ellis, John Cassay, Laura Martin series. And this particular collection comprises issues 15 to 27, as well as two other additional specials we'll talk about. 15 came out in October of 2001. That was the cover date anyway. And then the final issue came out 8 years later. So this was a long running series. It's interesting. So let's look at it this way. 15 came out in October 2001. 16 didn't come out for 2 years.
Really? I was curious where the break was.
So it goes like this. 16 was October 2003. 17 was December 2003. 18, February 2004. So and then May 2004 for 19. So for those five issues, we were on a pretty solid every other month schedule. Then we jump. Issue 20 was September 2004. 21, December 2004. 22, March 2005. 23, August 2005.
Ugh.
24, March 2006. 25, June 2006. Jump to 26, December 2006. Jump to 27, December 2009.
So that's way harder to... Jesus. That's way harder to keep up with in the trades we read than yeah. A year apart.
No, the most they ever did it in a run in this particular trade was four issues a year. The most frequent it came out was quarterly. And that was only once.
Mm-hmm.
Two issues a year in 2003, four in 2004, two in 2005, three in 2006, and one in 2009. It was rough.
I think that has a lot to do with why I gave up on it.
And I totally understand. Totally. I love this book so much that we talked about in the last show. So a lot of our overall thoughts on Planetary and our history with it, we talked about in the first episode dealing with book one. But, you know, in that Wildstorm, Warren Ellis, you know, explosion of creativity, this was my favorite one. So I stuck with it. But it was hard. I remember talking about 27 on the show. 26 would have the last couple would have come out while I was still doing the show. We probably talked about them, but I don't remember. But 27 for sure. And I think you weren't on that one. Because I don't think we talked about that because you never read the final issue.
No, I hadn't.
Or maybe you shouldn't read it.
I hadn't read, like, I gave up in the teens.
So this is all new for you.
Yes, it was. And for all intents and purposes, the first book was too.
Right.
Like, I had read some of it, but I don't think I was ready for it at the time. You know, reading it now is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
My literacy is much improved, basically.
But also just getting to keep the story in your head and not having to remember what happened 2 years ago is a giant plus for a book like this. Even though it is told episodically, there is a story, and especially in this book more than the first one. It's more of a straight shot through the story.
Yes. Yeah, Snow is on a mission in this one, and it matters.
Right. So you have to. This is the Planetary team of Elijah Snow, Jaquita Wilson?
Wagner,
and then the drummer. That's drummer. Right. She was raised in Germany, I think. Up against the Four, who are analogs of the Fantastic Four. The fight against the Four really ramps up here, and we learn the origins of the Four. We meet the Four. We see a lot more of what's going on as Warren Ellis finishes up his it's really his trip through pop culture, genre of pop culture, as we get analogs of the Lone Ranger and the Shadow, and there's more with the Tarzan analog and Doc Savage and James Bond, Captain Marvel. This is what this whole series has been, really, but here we get a lot of that as it's all tied into the four. What did you think overall? Having read it for the first time all the way through, like, you know, in general.
Okay, yeah, I mean, as a whole thing, I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. I think that we talk about Warren Ellis as a mind, as a writer, and, you know, it is, you know, he's right up there. I mean, he's this guy who does stuff that is completely unique and new and sort of his, I don't know how true it is, but it seems like his grasp of near-term science and physics and all of those things is very strong. So even if it's not rooted in science, you would believe that it is, or there's something that he read that made it work that way.
He's a futurist the same way Neal Stephenson is a futurist.
He
extrapolates on current trends in science. And even go back to Michael Crichton, too. He did the same thing in his novels, where you would not know for sure if what you're reading was something that's actually true or something that they made up, because Warren Ellis is really good at technical gobbledygook.
And his way of combining that with sort of with superhero mythos, along with, you know, his, you know, edgy, you know, kick-splode thing.
Right.
You know, works really well. Like, it's a thing. And you know what? Here's the thing. I got way over him as a person who I wanted to admire. You know, like, he has had a whole cult of personality thing, and I met him once, and like, I don't know. I just didn't dig it, and I didn't like the whole thing. But I never really let that get in the way of the work. I was like, he's a really good example of, like, yeah, whatever. Be weird. Be a dick. You know, like, your work's really good, and it's fine. Right. Like, I don't care. I think the other thing that I came away with it is that I started to get a real understanding. I started thinking a lot about John Cassaday.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first set of these that we read were stronger.
Yes.
From an art standpoint, for sure. And I think that Laura Martin really did a lot of heavy lifting, or whoever else had been to cover, you know, color a specific issue or something like that. Really.
I think she did all the regular ones. Dave Barron, I think, did one of the backup issues.
Yeah, but she really held that together, because there are parts where I think, especially as we get further into it, and you know, that they hadn't been doing them as regularly, They were rougher. He does certain things really well. He does that sort of scale, you know, like they back up, there's a huge hole in the earth and they're there. He did that sort of shot of the old timey spacecraft, you know, and the dead astronauts.
There's also some really great fight scenes in here.
Yes.
He choreographs really action scenes really well.
But then other stuff is not great. And I think that has something to do with the scripts that he's getting from Warren Ellis. I think that, you know, I think Ellis is able to tailor the material to the artist really well.
Yeah.
And so, but when Cassaday has done other stuff, it's not been great. Like,
I'm going to make an analogy and see what you think based on something we were just talking about before the show. In the same way that Jason Lee is the best expression of Kevin Smith's writing.
Oh, wow.
Jason Lee is not the greatest actor in the world, but he's the best expression of Kevin Smith's writing. I would say John Cassaday might be the best expression of Warren Ellis' writing, even if he's not the best artist in the world.
Maybe. I can see. I don't know that I've...
What I'm trying to say is he has lots of problems, but it almost doesn't matter in the context of this particular story.
I agree.
Because of the overall way it looks and the way it's being told. Like, his face has changed.
Uh-huh.
Snow looks 10 years younger and older, depending on the panel.
Snow is all over the place in this book.
By the end of this book, he's drawing everybody with giant eyes, which became a thing he started doing. But it really works with... And it's almost like how we love Brent Anderson when he draws Astro City.
Okay.
And we wouldn't imagine it looking any other way, but he may not necessarily be the best artist in the world. Whereas here, I can't imagine Planetary. And there's a backup story where Jerry Ordway draws it, and he's a... technically, I think, more skilled artist than Cassaday is, but it doesn't look right.
It doesn't. It's an odd choice, but I actually kind of liked it because of that.
Yes. So I think Cassaday is an interesting story here, because he is kind of all over the map and his style is changing, but I think it works with the particular story he's telling.
Yes. And some of the stuff in here is world class. His sense of composition is really amazing. And then there's other parts where you're like, you're totally phoning it in here.
Right.
The juxtaposition of those is very apparent in this. And I think, and I'm totally speculating or I just don't remember. I believe most of the delay was due to Warren Ellis himself, not the art team.
Sure. I mean, it's impossible to really know. He was also notorious, like Fell and all those books were all because he was slow.
Exactly. So anybody else coming on here was doing it in between other jobs that they had to line up to make a living.
Sure.
Theoretically. It can be hard to maintain that continuity of work because you're just not doing it in and out, you know, all the time. But, there were segments and there were sequences in here. The space laser that comes down and blows up the building in mm-hmm. Brazil, you know, that's great comic book work.
Yep.
You know, and no one else does stuff that looks like that. The bit when he goes to see the witch doctor lady.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, he trips out and he goes into the nano world or whatever it is. Like, that's real good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no doubt a ton of craft and imagination. But then there's other bits where you're like, what the fuck does Elijah Snow look like?
Right.
Because he doesn't look the same in anything. But you accept it. You take it. And again, I think the colorist really helped
maybe,
that
maybe
together.
That's Elijah Snow's other power. His face is constantly changing. Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I actually like this book a lot because story-wise, I think it moves like a freight train.
Yep.
It's decompresses. It's part of the famous Warren Ellis decompression storytelling. So there's not a lot of words or panels on the page. But even so, you know, we're starting to get somewhere. At this point, as you said, it's mm-hmm. Elijah Snow in a revenge mode because the Four has really fucked his life up. So we're barely towards the end of the story in terms of what's actually happening on the page. You know, he's putting the pieces into place. He's exposing their weaknesses. You know, he confronts the Johnny Storm character and disables him, and they dispatch the Thing character. And, you know, we're moving very rapidly here, and that was really fun to read. It was sort of like this kind of momentum is almost impossible when you're only doing two or three books a year. So mm-hmm. reading it all at once, you're really moving, and I really liked the pace of the
yeah, book. And also pretty much everything in it was satisfying. You know, you get a lot of Elijah's backstory, such as it is. Mm-hmm. You get Jaquita Wagner's backstory and how it ties into him, and that was satisfying. You get Drum's, you know, backstory, and it's satisfying in that way. You get the Four. Right. You get, you know, and it all, you know, most of them are takes on stories that exist already, be they comic book or otherwise. The Four is clearly the Fantastic Four, and, you know, there's sort of a Tarzan thing that happens. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. You know, the way that the Four get their powers and the whole story around that, where they go into the Bleed, they come out, they find out there's a multiverse, they make a deal with one of the planets that they will get Earth in order to give them powers. Like, it was great.
That was very New Gods-y.
Yeah, the apocalypse-like planet thing.
Yeah, and then the people show up, they had like a mother box. But the intricate plotting was really terrific here, the way everyone's life ties together through these century babies. And
yep.
And this one group of pulp heroes that we met in the first book that all died, you know, they're all tied into the story somehow, like in various ways. And then at the end, the final issue, which I had completely forgotten about, but I remembered it as I read it, was you get this really mind-bending time travel story that didn't feel, often time travel stories as your Deus Ex Machina feel can feel like a cheat, but this felt very much in that Warren Ellis future real technology thing that we talked about. You know, it felt like as plausible as time travel can possibly be. And that was interesting.
Remarkably well conceived and thoughtful.
Yes. There's a reason why this is one of the high water marks of that era. Even more so, I think, looked upon than The Authority.
I mean, I think they had different effects. And we've said, and it could be said, and we hold this view that The Authority affected superhero comics after it in a pretty major way. It's certainly the most major way since 86. And Planetary had a broader appeal.
No, I think Planetary was less broad, but this is the more esoteric book, I think, even though it shouldn't have been. But Authority was the sort of widespread, you know, crowd pleaser.
Yeah, but I did get the sense that this was a handoff to people book more than The Authority.
Could be.
Like, you
this
know,
one also
they
never
tried
came
to
out.
Make a TV show.
Yes.
Didn't they? Or did they make a pilot?
Could be. This one is more television show where ready.
Yeah. You know, I also think, you know, if they had kept on a schedule, maybe not even monthly, but just semi-regularly, it probably would have been way more successful than it was. They could probably be living off of this.
Right.
And they didn't, which is sad.
But also, I'm kind of glad we didn't have 45 issues of this because it's a very tight story.
Well, I agree with that. Absolutely. I just mean if they finished it all at once and let it have continuity, it would have... more people would have stuck with it. You could have gained comic readers.
One of the things that was very apparent in this book, and it's also usually apparent in Warnell's stuff, and it's something we've talked about a lot, is that despite his outward demeanor of the gruff, sort of mean writer type, he's a guy whose work is always full of optimism and heart, whether it's hidden behind a character like Spider Jerusalem, who on the outside was very angry and violent, but was angry and violent because he was an optimistic character who was facing reality as much as it was in that book. It's the same thing here. You got these characters who just want to make the world a better place, just want to save their friends, just want to do good in the face of all this evil. And that's something that's a thread through a lot of his work, especially back in the early 2000s. Yeah. And very, very strong. I mean, the whole thing here is basically, when it comes down to it, is they're trying to save Ambrose Chase, their team member who was killed in the very beginning. And that's sort of the entire point of everything, is to get revenge on the Four for killing him, but also to save him. That's what this story is ultimately about.
Yeah, that's true. And it's really hard not to be impressed by sort of the... He has such great concepts for characters. Mm-hmm. Like, the drummer should be stupid. Like, it really should be stupid. And think about how long the payoff was before we even had any idea what he was.
Right. Almost the
end. You know, it was in this that they sort of talked about.
Issue 23 out of 27 before we get his origin.
Yeah. And it works. And then at the end, so basically Elijah goes on this revenge mission and Jaquita's like, is this okay? And drummer's playing it kind of cool. And then he kind of just reveals, he goes, well, because I have all the information, mm-hmm. I trust him. And I will trust him implicitly. And like, that's that team thing. That's, you know, that's the West Wing. That's what, you know, right. Like, we're with you because you're doing the right thing. It may not even seem like it.
Like, this team never tore apart. Like, it never got to a point where, like, one of them was on the outs, the other two were angry. Like, whenever they got mad at Snow, he always revealed that his either intentions were good or he knew what was doing the whole time. They never really got to the point where, you know, Drummer and Jaquita were like, fuck this guy and we're out. It was always like they were always a strong team.
That's a great point, and that is such a, like, typical thing to do, and I love it when they don't do that. No, the team sticks together. We're together. We're in this. You know, but like the concept of the drummer specifically, or even Elijah Snow, who, you know, he froze that guy's pee. You know, you know, there's just all these great ideas. You know, it's like Jack Hawksmoor from The Authority. Like, he lives through the cities. Like, there was this little period of sort of fertile thinking that he'd been doing, that his imagination that just paired perfectly well with what comic books needed at the time. Mm-hmm. And this is what comic books needed at the time. It's almost like the you know, his whole day, idea is that there's the Century Babies. Well, in 2000, Warren Ellis was the Century Baby for comics.
Yes.
And this, along with The Authority, but this almost more than anything, really does... You know, it sets the table for everything.
It's almost a return to the Silver Age sensibility, in which he takes a look at science and then he extrapolates characters out of that, which is what happened in the 60s. And we sort of got away from that. And everyone in the 90s just had these nebulous purple energy powers. And it wasn't like they really thought about, you know, information and how technology had changed and how that would affect, you know, superheroes or people with powers like that.
The word used of his characters is that, like, he's taken this scientific approach to how pieces fit together. The world needs this. Elijah Snow has a job, mm-hmm. and that creates a character. You know, it's a real character. Right. I'm saying, you know, as opposed to, oh, this guy's like my uncle that I know, and I'll give him wings. You know, like it's more crystalline than those other things. It's all part of a system, and it's really impressive.
I'd like to jump to the backups for a second.
Please.
We have two things here. One is Planetary, JLA, Terra Occulta, written by Warren Ellis, drawn by Jerry Ordway, colored by Dave Barron, which is a one-shot story in which Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman of this particular world, it's an Elseworlds book, it's got the Elseworlds stamp on it, face off against the Planetary. And then the next one is a Planetary Batman crossover, which we'll get to in a second. It made me think of the Wildstorm book that just finished that you really loved, in which Warren Ellis reimagined his own characters, because...
Yeah.
In this particular issue, which is, again, not set in the DCU and not set in the Planetary universe, it's set in its own new world, Planetary is different.
Yeah.
They're vicious bad guys, which is like the exact opposite of what they are in the regular book. And I found it very interesting that at the time, he basically did what he did in the Wildstorm, which is reimagine his own characters in a different way. They're vicious bad guys. They killed all the heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got all these superhero corpses in their moon base. So at the time, he was contemporaneously reimagining his characters in the same way he would do, you know, 15 years later with The Authority in the Wildstorm books. I found that really interesting that he was already not holding them to be precious, because he really makes them bad guys here.
I feel like that's one of those things where like, he's just got so many ideas that he can't, you know, like, he's got to pick a direction to go with the guys. And then he goes that way and he's like, well, they also have this. I could have done this. And, like, he can make a real story out of that.
Right. I thought it was fun. And as you mentioned, Jerry Ordway is an interesting choice for that. He's a very traditional classic superhero artist. Warren Ellis is not at all a very traditional classic superhero writer. And putting them together is a very interesting editorial choice. And I thought it really worked. I thought it really worked really
well. It
does.
It was a lot of, I'm trying not to use the word interesting, but I really enjoyed reading it and thinking about it and just like, what must that call have been like? Do Warren Ellis and Jerry Ordway, do they have anything to talk about? Maybe they do though. Like maybe that's because they're both comic book creators and they, you know, I have to expect that Warren Ellis appreciates classic comic book art.
And the last image of that story is Clark Kent's dead body floating away in space.
Then the other question is like, was Ordway like, whatever, or was Ordway like, this is great. I've never seen the man. I don't know what he looks like.
He just looks like a dude.
Yeah.
Just a dude who makes comics. I haven't seen him in person since the 90s. You know, I met him at the comic convention when I was in high school. He's just a dude. Like, picture kind of like Dan Jurgens.
So what's interesting is this story was the last page, Clark Kent floating away in space. It says Ordway 02.
Yeah, so it would come out in 02.
So this was really early in the other book.
Let's see. Go back. I got my dates in front of me. So this would have been during the period of the... This was the year there was no book at all between issues 15 and 16.
Huh.
So this was the filler book that came out.
So it was established enough, though, that like...
Yeah, we were more than halfway through.
Yeah. Still, though.
It'll come as no surprise that I really love Planetary Batman Night on Earth, which is done by almost the regular team, Warren Ellis, John Cassaday, and Dave Barron again, instead of Laura Martin.
Yep.
In which starts off taking place within the planetary world, takes place within the world we've been reading. They go to the Gotham City of that universe. And I thought that was a whole fun setup in which he talks about, you know, the opium addicts and the absinthe fiends who designed the city. That was very Warren Ellis-y. They come across a dude who has within him the ability to create a bubble around him that switches the multiverse, you know, basically turns the dial and changes the planet they're on. And so this entire book is basically a excuse to do all the different major versions of Batman. So you have the Batman at the time in the comics, and then you have the 66 Adam West version, then you have the Dark Knight Returns version, then you have the original Bob Kane, Bill Finger version, and then you have another sort of the version that they end up with. I think that's just a totally new version. But it was just it was Batman porn. Oh, there's a Neil Adams version.
Yeah, it really was, and it was, you know, basically through the lens of Jakita, like, I like this guy. To being like, what the fuck's with this guy? And it was neat. It was really fun. And it was very whimsical.
Yeah, I loved it.
For a Warren Ellis book.
And Cassidy can draw the fuck out of Batman in various forms.
Yeah. At least he can do the splash pagey stuff.
But it was a lot of fun. It was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it was. And it's strong Cassidy also.
So what year was this one? Let's find out. You keep talking while I find out.
Yeah, I mean, like, this one, I have a feel. I mean, I don't know. You're going to tell me in a second, but I feel like it was way more consistent as we went through it. Like, it was done sort of in a stretch so that, you know, it hit a stride.
Well, this is just a one-issue thing. This is just another one.
Yeah, I know, but even that with Warren Ellis could take a long time. It's like a Sorkin thing where he's delivering a page at a time.
So this was also, this was 2003. So this was the next year. So that's interesting.
That is interesting.
And in 2003, they put out two books, issues 16 and 17.
If I was a Planetary fan, I'd be pretty pissed off.
Right, so somehow Warren Ellis and John Cassaday could draw this.
Maybe they need to sell some books.
Maybe.
You know, like, they thought, well, maybe we can get some of these people hooked. They'll come to the other book. Maybe the sales were flagging or something. I don't know.
It's interesting. But I thought both backups were fun in very different ways.
I'm glad I read them.
I am too. And, you know, the tendency now is like, it would be great to do more Planetary. I think the characters are great. I think the world is great. I think it's great as a small piece. It's a one story. It's very indicative of a time and place in comics.
I think your comparison to Astro City is very apt, in that I wouldn't want it to come back. But if it did come back, if it was anybody else other than the people who did it, it would be weird and I wouldn't like it.
Which is interesting that you feel that way more than the Authority, because you really like the Wildstorm. Is it because it was already a creative team on the Authority when Mark Miller took over?
Yeah, the Authority's part
of Mark Miller and Frank Quietly took over?
Yeah, the Authority's also part of a shared universe that already existed. like Stormwatch was something, and then they brought in Brian Hitch, and Brian Hitch isn't going to do it forever.
Right.
And then, you know, Quitely, and then Mark Miller came on. So other people even wrote it.
Right.
So it's not the same thing. This is more like Astro City. Like, it's not crossing over for the most part with anything. If they do, it's a special, and it's a contained sort of universe that looks a certain way. It's like respect to them for not switching up throughout. You know, they finished it eventually. You know, over all that time, they didn't bring in other people.
Yeah, I love this book. I own it. Well, I used to have the issues to give the issues away, but I have the two absolute editions that came out. These are great collections with the extra issues. I look back at that time, that very exciting time in which I was reading Planetary, and I was reading The Authority, and I was reading Transmetropolitan, and there was all kinds of really exciting new comics being made by new people, and I think Transmetropolitan is one of the all-time great long Vertigo, even though it wasn't Vertigo series. But Planetary, I look back...
Helix
at the beginning, at least, and then I think it Vertigo by the end. Planetary, I look back on probably the most fondly for some reason. I think it's just like a very special short story.
You know, like you look back and you're right. Warren Ellis was just churning out wonderful stuff, and I remember people like, man, when's he gonna do X-Men? And I was like, look what he's doing now. He doesn't need to do X-Men.
Right.
This is really good. Buy it. You do not need to validate him by having him write the Fantastic Four, which he did in Ultimate Fantastic Four. And that was like this, but it, you know.
Not as good.
No, it wasn't.
What's funny about this book is basically he was doing that, you know. He was doing all these major characters just in a thin veneer of a different version of them. But they were very clearly them. I mean, it's very clearly the Lone Ranger
but also
in this book.
It was way too fucked up to be the mainstream version of it.
Sure. At least with the Fantastic Four. He had like tumors coming out of the side.
It's so weird that like all the big guys, British guys, really, you know, Alan Moore did this too. Like he basically did other versions of well-known characters over and over again in different things. And he's like, I don't like to do superhero comics. Like, you're doing them.
Right.
like no one was making Warren Ellis do these analogs in Planetary. He chose to do them. But at the same time, his persona, and again, Alan Moore was the same thing. His persona was like, well, I don't want to have to do the superhero comics. Floppies, he called them, you know, like, and it's like, you clearly love them, but you're not reconciled with it.
Right.
Or maybe he thought, like, this is what I need to do to get attention, but it feels like he could have not.
I think the only one that stuck to it was probably Garth Ennis.
Yeah. You know? And the same thing with him. Like, you know, The Boys is about to come out, and that's, you know, here's what I think of these characters.
Were they straight analogs as much as the other ones are? I don't remember.
I don't remember, but, I mean, still, though, it's like, these are superheroes, so there was a speedster.
Sure.
And a strong guy and whatever. Who knows?
Well, I'm actually really glad that you chose this because we were discussing what we were going to do with the final books close of this year.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't read these since it came out.
I was really glad for the excuse to finish it. It's one of those things that I'm glad I've got to read because I think it's an important document.
For sure. That particular time is a lot of fun. You know, Warren Ellis has gone to do many things. Cassidy has gone to do many things. They've both changed over the years. I think this is a perfect sort of look at them at their peak. You know, at the height of their powers.
I mean, Warren Ellis is still doing really thought-provoking stuff if he can be, you know...
bothered.
Yeah.
But he's also not holding the industry in the palm of his hand like he was in 2000, from 2000 to 2003 or 4. And what's great about him was he didn't take that opportunity to get paid to do Batman. He did it. He kept doing his books.
Uh-huh.
You know, he kept doing his own stuff as much as it was analogs of other characters.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he built his career the way that he wanted it to be, you know, as well as anybody.
Yep.
And I think that that's definitely laudable.
So that is Planetary Book 2, the July Booksplode discussion. I enjoyed those two books.
Do we do ratings on these? I can't even remember anymore.
I can't remember. Sure. I don't know. What would you do?
4.5.
4.5 out of 5? Sure. That's fine. That seems fair.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did this one. I'm glad we did the whole loop on it. And it's a great look back. If you didn't listen to the first show for some reason, but you did this one, go back and listen to the first show because we got really more in depth on the history of the book and things like that.
Yeah.
I liked reading it and enjoyed talking about it. And we have another show coming out in September and then once again in November. And we have those two books plotted out. If you have thoughts on Planetary, if you want to tell us, go to fanboy.com. There'll be a post for the show. You can tell us all you thought about the book if you read it at the time. If you remember things better than we do, because it was coming out very sporadically. I don't remember the reasons why at the time. Anyway, check that out. And you can go to iFanboy.com. The sister show for this is Josh's Talksplode interview show. His last one is with writer Tom King. His next one will be with someone else. It'll be exciting.
I don't know. I could just bring Tom back.
You can have your own Bendis tapes.
Oh, there you go.
The Tom Files. King Corner.
There you go. King Corner. That's it.
And, of course, there's the weekly Pick of the Week show in which Josh and I talk about the week's comics. You can check that out every week at iFanboy.com, and we'll be back with that next week, but we'll be back with a Booksplode in 2 months and a Talksplode next month. And until then, I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Thank you for Christmas.
Thank you for Christmas.
I spun out for a second there. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. Is something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it. Work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.